morning. My name is Stephanie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the report on public finances and public debt for the second quarter, 2011. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the conference over to Dr. Miguel Missmacher. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Mexican Ministries of Finance conference call on the results for economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the first semester of 2011. Let me just remind our friends from the press that the call is off the record. As all of you know, the expansion of the Mexican economy continued during the first semester of the year, and the results in terms of public finances have been generally favorable. And instead of going over the precise details of the results, which you already know from the bulletin and from the report, I will just be highlighting some of the most important results that we seem to have observed during the second quarter of the year. Going into the results in terms of the economic outlook, the main macro indicators suggest that even though the annual growth rate of the Mexican economy will be coming down from 4.6% in the first quarter to what we expect to be 3.5% more or less in the second quarter of the year, this decline is somewhat exaggerated by the Easter effect. And our estimations actually suggest that the Mexican economy accelerated during the second quarter of the year in quarterly seasonally adjusted terms. Controlling for the Easter effect, the annual growth rate would have probably come down from something like 4.3% in the first quarter of the year to 3.8% in the second quarter. This number is interestingly very similar to the expectation that appeared in the latest survey of analysts of Banco de Mexico. And actually, what this would imply in terms of quarterly growth rate is an increase from 0.5% in the first quarter of the year, non-annualized, to something much closer to 1% in the second quarter, again, non-annualized. So implicit in the numbers, in spite of the reduction in the annual growth rate, what we're observing is an acceleration of economic activity in Mexico. Moreover, this new pattern, the new pattern that was announced in the U.S. in terms of economic growth after the latest revision to their numbers, is much more similar to the pattern that we're observing in Mexico than what the previous figures actually suggested. In particular, the new growth numbers in the U.S. are, in terms of quarterly annualized growth, 2.3% in the fourth quarter of 2010, 0.4% in the first quarter of 2011, and 1.3% in the second quarter of 2011 as well. The same numbers for Mexico are actually quarterly annualized growth of 4.5% in the fourth quarter of 2010, then it did come down to something like 2.1% in the first quarter of 2011, but is expected to come back to something close to 4% in the second quarter of 2011. So actually, the pattern that we see now in the U.S. numbers is more consistent with what we have been observing in Mexico. And obviously, on the one hand, it suggests a weaker pattern of growth in the U.S., but on the other hand, it also indicates that in spite of this weaker growth in the U.S., Mexico has been able to maintain relatively strong rates of growth during the recent period. So in that respect, we are continuing to expect growth slightly above 4%, in spite of sort of the weaker results that we have observed in the U.S., given the fact that the evolution, the recent evolution in the Mexican economy has been significantly better than that in the U.S. Moving on to some of the detailed results in the second quarter of the year, but I'm going to be reporting this in seasonally non-annualized terms, which is somewhat different from what you see in the bulletin. You will observe that the dynamism that is being maintained in terms of components of external demand, domestic demand, and production has been quite favorable during the second quarter of the year. In particular, manufacturing exports have grown by 3.5% in quarterly non-annualized terms in the second quarter of the year, and TAP sales show growth of 1.7% non-annualized. Imports of investment goods are showing growth of 7.1% in the second quarter. We don't have full numbers for the quarter yet. These are numbers in April and May, and this suggests that the IGAI has increased by 1.2%, just considering those 2 months, industrial production 1.4%, and services 1.1%. So overall, the numbers that we're observing in the second quarter of the year pose an important picture of acceleration during that quarter. Moving on to the results of public finances, during the first semester of 2011, the public balance registered a deficit of 125 billion pesos with a primary balance of 18.5 billion pesos. If we exclude investment by Pemex, the public balance registered a deficit of 35.6 billion pesos. Just to remind you, the overall balances that were approved by Congress for the year were 70 billion pesos without Pemex's investment, and of 356 billion pesos, including Pemex's investment. So obviously the results that we've observed through the first semester of the year are consistent with the overall balances that were approved by Congress for the year as a whole. Budgetary revenues of the public sector actually accelerated from annual growth of 1.6% in the first quarter to 4.6% in the first semester as a whole. If you remember, last quarter when we had the conference call, and we also let this be known in the bulletin, the results during the first quarter were particularly weak due to a mix of temporary factors. We were anticipating that revenues were going to be accelerating in the remaining of the year, and that is precisely what we have observed. Within the results in the second quarter, oil revenues increased, oil revenues in the first semester increased by 8.5% in real annual terms. If we actually adjust for the high comparison base due to the use of resources from Pemex's stabilization fund by 20 billion pesos in the first quarter of last year, we would actually be observing growth of 13.5% in real annual terms in terms of oil revenues. Non-oil tax revenues increased by 2.3% in real annual terms. Within, we're observing real increases of 7.7% in the excise taxes, in the YEP, 7.1% in the tax on new automobiles, and 5.6% in the collection, the joint collection of the income tax, YETU and IDE. On the other hand, collection of the VAT has declined by 1.3% due to the issue of the high rebates that we already discussed in our conference call for the first quarter. Revenues of the public entities under direct budgetary control, different from Pemex, increased by 6.6% in real annual terms, and non-oil, non-tax revenues of the federal government decreased by 7.7% in real terms. Given that we're not having the high non-recurrent revenues that were registered in the first half of 2010, this decline is actually consistent with our projections for the year. Regarding the revenue results with respect to the original program for the year, revenues in the first semester as a whole are still below the amount originally envisaged in the program, but the difference declined from a difference of 13.4 billion pesos in the first quarter of the year to 6.7 billion in the first semester as a whole. This obviously implies that we had excess revenues of close to 6 billion pesos in the second quarter of the year, and we're anticipating to observe a similar pattern during the third and fourth quarter of the year, so that for the year as a whole, we won't be having a value of revenues that is below the program. If at all, revenues could end up being slightly above the program. Moving on to expenditures, during the first semester, total public sector expenditures increased by 5.3% in real annual terms, and programmable expenditures grew by 6.1% in real terms. The financial cost of the public sector actually decreased by 0.6% in real annual terms with respect to the first semester of 2010, mainly as a result of the appreciation of exchange rate. In terms of some of the results within programmable expenditures, expenditures on social development increased by 7.6% in real terms. Physical budgetary and fostered investment increased by 2.4% and 2.3% in real terms. This relatively low number is due to some delays in PEMEX's investment. If you actually look at investment without PEMEX, budgetary investment increased by 27%, and foster investment increased by close to 25%. Federal resources transferred to states and municipalities increased by 4.8% in real terms, and shared revenues increased by 4.2% in real annual terms. Moving on to the results in terms of public debt, as you know, the public debt strategy for this quarter has tried to continue strengthening the structure of domestic debt and generating adequate conditions for the proper functioning and development of the local debt market. In that respect, we have continued to observe improvements in indicators such as maturity and duration. The marginal average maturity and duration of the gross issuance of fixed-rate bonds in the second quarter was 11.9 and 6.6 years, respectively. And what this has implied is that the average maturity of domestic debt increased marginally by 26 days from 7.34 years in the first quarter of 2011 to 7.41 years in the second quarter also of 2011, with a share of long-term fixed-rate government securities of 61.9% at the end of the second quarter. In terms of public debt stocks, that of the federal government's net domestic debt at the end of the second quarter of 2011 stood at 25.9% of GDP. 18% of this corresponds to external debt and 81.3% to the domestic component. When we move to total public sector's net debt, which includes the net debt of the federal government, public entities under direct budgetary control, and that of the development banks, that stock was 31.3% of GDP. Net domestic debt as a percentage of GDP was 22.2%. And the external component was 9.1% of GDP. When we move finally to the historical balance of the public sector borrowing requirements, it amounted to 35.4% at the end of the second quarter of 2011. With that, we would finish the introductory remarks and move to the question and answer session. Thank you.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad to ask a question. Your first question comes from the line of Leopoldo Pimentia with GBM Securities.
Thank you, Miguel. Thank you, Alessandro, for hosting this conference. I have three main questions, if you don't mind. The first one is, I'm wondering about if there is a particular reason behind the 43% fall in primary balance, or you have reported on the debt report for second quarter. That's my first question. The second one is about the first article in Financiero. which mentioned that fuel subsidies have duplicate amounts stipulated in revenue law for the year. So, considering this background, should we expect the ministry to speed up the overall revision of tax prices during the second half of the year? And finally, well, third question is, considering the expiration of the car ownership tax next year, and what could we expect in terms of for the Ministry of Finance or even the state, if there is any proposal to compensate tax revenues from this front? Thank you.
So regarding the reduction in the primary balance with respect to what we observed during last year, it's basically associated with obviously two factors. Revenues, as I mentioned, are slightly below program. So in that respect, that is having a temporary effect in terms of the primary balance. And expenditures have been evolving much better and much closer to the originally envisaged program than has been the case in previous years. It's not that it has to do anything with some sort of fundamental deterioration, but it's basically due to the mix of these two factors. To the extent that we continue to observe sort of an acceleration of revenues in the second half of the year and a closing of the gap between observed revenues and the programmed ones, together with a more moderate rate of growth in expenditures as we sort of the accelerated expenditures during the first semester of the year are going to sort of have a payback in the opposite direction during the second half of the year, we're anticipating that the primary balance should be ending at a level that's consistent with what was approved by Congress, even though the surplus is smaller than what was observed by the first semester of last year. From the point of view of gasoline prices, as we have mentioned, our estimation is that the subsidy implicit in gasoline prices this year will probably be something in the order of 1%. At this point in time, we're not envisaging changing our policy of gasoline increases in the sense that, nevertheless, the increase in domestic, the marginal increase in gasoline prices is already being higher than the marginal increase in external prices, and therefore the gap between domestic and external prices is gradually decreasing. Though obviously the large spike in gasoline prices that took place at the end of last year and the beginning of this year did imply that the gap between domestic and external prices increased, but we're gradually reducing it, and we are not envisaging changing the current policy given current circumstances. As to the car ownership tax, that's something that is already widely anticipated, and actually an important part of that is something that is already being observed in the numbers this year, in the sense that many states actually anticipated the reduction in the ownership tax that was going to be mandated at the federal level for next year. So in that respect, already many states have decided to either reduce the car ownership tax or to actually try to substitute it for something else. Given that the tax is 100% transferred to the states, it actually poses, it has no implications from the point of view of public finances, from the point of view of the federal public sector.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Eduardo Torres with BBVA.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for hosting this conference. And I just wanted to ask, in terms of investment, if you could get into some more detail on the outlook and what kind of investment expenditure will rebound, if it will, during the following months and in 2012. Thank you.
Sure. Obviously, regarding public sector investment, on the one hand, we have had some delay in terms of investment projects by Pemex, but everything else, as I mentioned, is going actually very well. with an important process to try to move government investment into a calendar that is somewhat more aggressive than what perhaps observed in previous years. The issue itself with Pemex's investment is perhaps somewhat exaggerated in the sense that clearly, given that a lot of Pemex's investment is associated and denominated in dollars, and given that we actually calculate the real rate of growth with the GDP deflator for all of the numbers in our public finances bulletins, clearly the results from the point of view of Pemex are somewhat better than what is implied by the simple use of the GDP deflator. But nevertheless, there has been some delay. But what Pemex is telling us is that they are anticipating to accelerate importantly their investment projects during the second half of the year, and to end up with an overall level of investment that is similar to what is envisaged in the program as a whole. From the point of view of investment, as you know, clearly that was the one component that had the longest lag during the current recovery. We really didn't observe a major pickup in investment until sort of mid-2010, when as the economy recovered and capacity utilization started to return to more normal levels, we started to observe a pickup both in machinery and equipment and a bit slower in construction, but nevertheless some pickup as well. So to the extent that the economic recovery continues, we should continue to observe a pickup in investment, which could potentially surprise on the upside in the sense that the levels of production overall are already back to the levels that were observed before the crisis, but the levels of investment, particularly construction, are still below the levels that we observed before the crisis, and our perception is that to the extent that the economic recovery continues and we observe some solution to the issues in the U.S., as we seem to be observing some progress, or those in Europe, we should start to observe, or we should actually observe that this pickup in investment does continue to go going forward.
Okay, thank you. Just one more thing. In terms of the national infrastructure program, do you think the major projects are going as planned? Investments are going on as scheduled in terms of roads or in electricity outside of Pemex, of course, which you already mentioned. The other sectors.
They're actually going perfectly online. When you look at spending, perhaps they are not 100% equal to program, but the difference between the actual expenditures and the program is the smallest that we have observed in the last 6 years. So the projects are going very much in line with what was envisaged in the budget. And actually, the difference between actual outlays and what was originally envisaged is actually the best that we have seen perhaps during the last decade. Part of this, perhaps it's worth explaining a little bit more about this, given that you have a very specific question. In previous years, sometimes what happens in the budget negotiations is that, as you know, sometimes congressmen allocate resources to projects that do not have ready, already executed projects for their execution. Sometimes in previous years we have been relatively patient, but this year what we've decided is that if the executive project is not well prepared, then we will very quickly reallocate the resources towards other areas. And this is something that implies a bit of a structural change in the execution of investment projects with respect to what we've observed in previous years.
Okay, that's very interesting. Thank you very much.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. The next question comes from Luis Arcentales with Morgan Stanley.
Hey, Miguel. So just to clarify, what you're telling us is that the execution that you told us 3 months ago that was at some of the highest levels we've seen in recent history remains so for this year, correct? The execution of public works or public investment.
That's exactly the case.
And can you give us a sense of the seasonality? How this? I mean, is it mostly front-loaded in the year, or should we expect this to be more or less equally distributed throughout the entire year?
Overall, the seasonality tends to be, even though we're sort of making this effort to improve the calendar of expenditures, the seasonality in terms of the distribution of expenditures throughout the year remains very highly charged in the second half of the year. So in a sense, what we're able to do with this is to actually sort of move forward some of the expenditures with respect to what with respect to the calendar in previous years, but the seasonality in the overall level of expenditures has always been and still remains, even though it's a bit better, still remains very strongly charged towards the end of the year.
Right, but this is for public works as well, because I know the current expenditures are lumped up in the fourth quarter.
Yes,
right?
This is for everything.
Okay, great. Thanks, Miguel.
Welcome.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Iker Kabitis with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, Miguel. Thanks for the call. My question is more regarding the first part of the presentation. If you could share a little bit of how's your view on the growth story for the second half of the year, particularly after the disappointing figures we have heard in the U.S., and more precisely regarding the manufacturing sector, which we already see a very bad number yesterday on the ISM side for July, levels close to 50. So I don't know if you could assess a little bit on how are the main potential growth risks you see over the second half of the year. Thank you.
Sure, Iker. I think that sort of to start with the GDP results in the U.S., because I think that the implications of those are fairly interesting for the Mexican economy, and then perhaps we can discuss a little bit what we're expecting for the second half. Clearly something, and to be honest, something which was sort of worrying me a little bit was that with the original U.S. numbers, there had been a deceleration in the U.S. between the fourth quarter of 2010 and the first quarter of 2011, which was smaller than what we had observed in Mexico. And in Mexico, actually, given the previous numbers for first quarter growth in the U.S., if you remember, first quarter growth in the U.S. was 1.9%, and the quarterly numbers for Mexico suggested that the Mexican economy had decelerated to 2%. To be honest, I was a bit more concerned in the sense that the deceleration in Mexico seemed to be quite similar, leading to similar rates of growth than in the U.S., and with a potentially stronger deceleration than the one that had been observed in the U.S. between the fourth and the first quarter of 2011. Now, what the new U.S. GDP numbers imply, and if you look at them going further back, they are actually much more consistent, as I mentioned, with the results that we observed in Mexico. So the deceleration in Mexico from growth of close to 4% to 2%, 4% in the fourth quarter to 2% in the first quarter, given the very sharp deceleration that was observed in the new numbers in the U.S., was no longer surprising for me. And obviously, given the acceleration that is implicit in the U.S. numbers in the second quarter, it doesn't surprise me as well that we're going to observe a very significant acceleration in Mexico as well, getting back to numbers of close to 4% growth in seasonally adjusted terms in spite of an extremely weak second quarter in the U.S. of growth of only slightly above 1%. So in that respect, what these numbers suggest is that what we really observed was sort of a typical pattern in Mexico, and that clearly the Mexican economy has a relationship with the U.S. economy. But what is still maintained is sort of this newer issue associated with higher competitiveness, the convergence in cost with China, very fast growth to third countries and so on, some stronger dynamism in domestic demand, which is showing that the Mexican economy actually has been growing at much faster rates than the U.S. and has been able to maintain a pretty strong rates of growth, with growth of perhaps 4% in seasonally annualized quarterly terms in the second quarter, in spite of this very weak growth in the U.S. of 1.3%. So obviously, the latest news from July, as you mentioned, from the ISM in manufacturers are not good. They could potentially imply a weaker pattern in the second half of the year in the U.S. compared with what was originally expected. But on the other hand, Mexico has been able to maintain these higher rates of growth in spite of a much weaker U.S. economy than had been envisaged. So in that respect, we could obviously observe some deceleration in the Mexican economy if the numbers disappoint in the U.S., but we would still, our expectation is that we would still be maintaining relatively high rates of growth. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We have a follow-up question from Luis Arcentales with Morgan Stanley.
Miguel, you brought up the issue of competitiveness, and I remember you showed us the manufacturing wage gap between China and Mexico, for example, and how that has narrowed. But what are other factors you think are playing a role in this, as you mentioned, this apparent increased competitiveness, which we've probably seen in historically high industrial exports, market share gains, and other issues?
Sure, Luis. I mean, clearly, on the one hand, the investment in infrastructure project, the increases in investment in infrastructure are real. No, so let's say during this administration, we've been investing almost 5 percentage points of GDP. Obviously, 2% of that is going for Pemex, but still, you're having 3% of investment in infrastructure in other sectors. Which is clearly higher than sort of the average in the OECD of slightly above 3% for total investment in infrastructure. And in that respect, that should be having some effect in terms of competitiveness. We have made a very significant process of deregulation and trying to reduce costs, regulatory costs for firms, as I'm sure you've seen, sort of the doing business indicators for Mexico show now that Mexico is sort of the country with the lowest cost of doing business in terms of all of these administrative costs in the entire hemisphere, with a very significant improvement in recent years. Obviously, the two fiscal reforms that we have made have allowed us to sort of maintain very low levels of interest rates and financial stability. Obviously, the evolution of international reserves has something to do with that as well. But overall, we have been observing during sort of the last 2 years extremely favorable conditions in financial markets, and moreover, credit to the private sector has changed the corner and is growing at rates of close to 10% in real annual terms. So overall, I mean, you have a set of improving underlying fundamentals together with a much better dynamism from the point of view of availability of credit. and those are real changes which should be supporting a better performance in the Mexican economy going forward.
Thanks, Miguel.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one. At this time, there are no additional questions.
Could you just ask one last time, operator?
Again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. That is star, then the number one. There are no questions at this time.
Very good. Thank you very much, operator. Thank you very much, everybody. And as always, if you have any additional questions or issues that you would like to discuss, just contact us through the Investor Relations Office. Thank you. Bye.